podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Just once in a decade, in a lifetime maybe, the world of entertainment is disrupted and utterly elated by something entirely new.
Good Lord!
And now for something completely different.
Good morning, good afternoon, good dawn, good dusk, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Just When You Thought You'd Had Enough Guerrilla Cricket podcast number two. We will be looking in the future at renaming the podcast, but that's what it is for now. And it seems that we have touched upon a raw nerve of people who want exciting, unprepared chat. We've had 189 downloads of the previous episode. I thought the world might have had enough of silly podcasts, but as Paul McCartney said, I look around me and I see it isn't so. I am Guerrilla Hendo, and alongside me, well, not alongside me, sort of with me, in front of me, all around me, coming out of my ears, I have none other than not Fred Titmus.
Hello.
And beneath him, but not in a sort of chronological way, or even in a sexual way, it's Paul Grubby Howarth. Look at that beard. That beard gets more remarkable by the minute.
Bless you, my child.
That's all right. Now, tell us. We pride ourselves on not preparing anything for these particular little podcasts. But one thing that struck me is I caught myself watching a little bit of the 2013-14, or was it 2013? Ashes, with James Anderson taking five wickets. Bizarrely, although I find it difficult to watch recorded cricket at the moment, I couldn't remember who had won. And that is extraordinary, isn't it, really?
It's just like you, Hendo, to be watching a series where England got stuffed. And choosing that out of the many cricket there is on
No,
YouTube.
this was the summer. The summer when things went right before the winter when things went wrong.
2013.
Yeah, 2013. It was that summer. And I found that I actually had to watch. This was about 8 o'clock in the morning. I put the TV on and I had to watch to remind myself who had won that particular game. So I think that's the thing about guerrilla cricket, isn't it?
That's up to your excitement.
Well, it did, but I mean, and that's the first time that I've actually been able to bear watching any sort of cricket on TV. All this recorded stuff that's being put out, and all the recorded commentaries of the World Cup from last year—it's just—it's just too early, isn't it? And it just emphasises the fact that there is no real cricket going on. Is that the way you guys feel about it?
Well, I have noticed a subgenre appearing on YouTube, which is Americans watching cricket and talking about it. And there's at least three separate people. There's a baseball pro, supposedly, who watches cricket and talks about the techniques that go into it. There's a couple of guys who sit in the studio just going, ooh, every time a batsman gets hit in the head or in the knackers. And there's another American, who doesn't seem to know very much about cricket. And he goes, whoa, every so often when he sees something on a ridiculous video. So I'm assuming they've decided to look at where hits come from on YouTube, and have decided that India is a market worth tapping.
That last one, he goes, "Whoa, it sounds like he might be Danny Morrison."
Oh, could
no, he's
be,
not that
it?
Bad, to be fair.
It sounds more. Sounds a bit more like Dick Emery, I have to say.
You are awful, but I like you.
I have to say that. Whoa, or maybe a bit of Frankie Howard. Maybe that's what I'm thinking. What about you, Grubby? Have you been finding time to watch any recorded cricket?
Yeah, I have. I've been quite enjoying some of the watch-along. But the interesting thing was the watch-along stuff on Sky of the 05 series. And then remembering, of course, that we all watched that on Channel 4. So you're watching it with Bob Willis commentating. So, for example, the Harmison ball. And just saying, and Harmison's got him out, rather than Mark Nicholas going, Harmison with a slower ball, one of the great balls. And there was something off of when I watched it, and I remembered that's what it was. It was the different commentary.
So you're talking about the limitations of Bob Willis as a ball by ball commentator.
No, not really. No, I love Big Bob. Loved. Do you? Still do. Yeah, no, I do actually. And but it's just that I particularly enjoyed Nico's commentary. I think it was one of the best pieces. He has his knockers, but. Actually, talking of knockers, a lovely 70s word, isn't it?
Steady, steady.
Knockers and ghoulies, I always think of particularly 70s words. And back to your American observers of our beautiful game, Fred, just going, ooh, when someone gets hit in the knackers, they have to learn that convention is to laugh your socks off.
That makes me think of a question, Fred, because you're a big follower of baseball. And whenever I've watched it, I've never seen a pitcher actually pitch one into the gonads of a batter.
No, it doesn't happen, but occasionally people in the field get hit. There was one player who famously refuses to wear an abdominal protector and never has his whole life, and caught a nasty one at third base, which is basically where you'd pull the ball. It's sort of mid-wicket. And I have to say that his teammates did react in the way that cricketing teammates tend to react.
So maybe it's a universal truth then, rather than...
Yeah, it is,
Well, hang on though, Fred. I mean, if you're fielding at third base, I mean, it's kind of like mid-wicket, isn't it, really? Or square
leg.
I mean, you should be able to see that before being hit, shouldn't you?
It does come off the bat pretty hard, you know, well over 100 miles an hour. So if you're fielding in pretty close, you can take a nasty one.
I mean, it's not like short leg, though, is it? I mean, when you get in at short leg and you get hit in the gonads, that's a completely different matter, because that's from about a yard away. Well, I just think it sounds like bad judgment from him. Just didn't get his hands anywhere near it.
Well, as he sails into the Hall of Fame the first time he's available, I'm sure he'll make a note that Nigel Henderson of South London doesn't think he's up to much.
Well, absolutely. I'll have to watch
and in fact, have to look at myself. Not impressed.
I will actually put a comment on that. I have to go onto YouTube, find it, and put not impressed, because really, if you can't get out of the way of a speeding ball from at mid-wicket without getting your meat and
your knackers in
play,
a twist.
I think that's quite poor, really. It's poor technique above everything, and I really do hate poor technique, as you know.
And do you use that very wording, Hendo? A, mid-wicket, and B, meat and two veg.
Yes, indeed. Midships, a mid-wicket, something like that.
No, stick with that terminology, and I think that'll be a lovely project for you this evening.
Well, it makes me...
There's a chance that Adrian Beltre will not understand a word you're talking about. It's probably
Adrian Beltre. Well, I'll go and look him up. What is the worst thing about no cricket? What is the worst thing? I ask you this question because tonight is the eve, as we're recording, the eve of the 2020 blast, or what would be the 2020 blast, and tomorrow would be Surrey v Middlesex at the Oval, crowd 28,000 packed together, drinking, enjoying the fare on offer. And that's why I can't really think about cricket at the moment, because when I do, I feel what we're missing.
You get a pang, do you?
I get a pang, a very, very nasty pang in various parts of my body.
Well, I'll tell you... I'll tell you one bad thing about no cricket, apart from the obvious there being no cricket, of course, is the sort of supposedly cricket stories that we have to put up with. So you know it's a slow news week when Chris Wokes makes two big stories in a week. The first was when he went back to training, just him on his own, with his six balls that no one else is allowed to touch. Very stiff he was, apparently. He said the first waddle to the toilet was interesting. So that's news this week. The second thing that featured Chris Wokes was him sort of making positive noises about Alex Hales returning to the England fold. Obviously he had that drugs ban and whatever else, and Woke said, well, if people have gone away for a time and worked on their weaknesses, they should be allowed a second chance. Should they, Johnny Bairstow?
Well, it's a fair point, although just before we came on air I did see some tweets going by of a story in which Owen Morgan was saying over my dead body would he get in this summer were there the chance to. So I think he's been ruled out by... Well, I mean, do you think that Owen Morgan's becoming a bit like Dominic Cummings? He's a bit untouchable now, isn't he, having won the World Cup?
Yeah, I mean, I find it amazing that he's regarded as this great cricketing brain. I mean, if you would have told me 15 years ago that Owen Morgan would be considered one of the great brains in cricket, I would have wondered what was going on, to be fair, because I don't think he's an idiot. If you're listening, Owen, hi. you know, I wouldn't have put him as, you know, the latest incarnation of Mike Brearley, apart from some of his test record, in which he probably is the incarnation of Mike, really.
Average of 23.
You know, everyone looks up to him as... it's a bit like Michael Vaughan. You know, after 2005, everyone assumed that Michael Vaughan was an absolute genius. And it wasn't until he started talking on the radio that we realised that the guy's an utter fool. And basically, whatever we thought about Duncan Fletcher, it must have all been Fletcher, because Vaughan is a complete idiot, basically. Had he never gone on the radio...
He does try to prove that on an almost daily basis.
Well, he does, yeah. And I'm wondering if the same is true of Morgan, whether the fact that we haven't heard that much of him talking about, you know, cricket and tactics, it may be a similar case with him, but I may be underestimating.
Sorry, go on, Grubby.
I was just going to say, I was just remembering the old Richie quote about captaincy. It's captaincy is 90% luck and 10% skill, but don't try it without that 10%. And one imagines that, you know, if you're Michael Vaughan in the mid-noughties, you've got a pretty decent set of players at your disposal, particularly the awesome foursome bowling quartet who never played together again after that series. And so you do need a bit of happenstance. But, you know, he made some good decisions. He drafted Peterson in and dropped Thought. That must have been a difficult decision to make. But when I've heard him speak about it on those endless retrospectives about that series, the main thing he appears to have brought to it from a kind of, well, more from an attitude point of view, it's more of a, let's play with no fear, let's have a pop at them, all this sort of stuff, which he sort of tells in quite reverential tones now. Someone asked me, are you going to play it safe? Are you going to have a go? We're going to have a pop at them. We're going to have a pop at them.
As if it was, well, some massive, yeah, but you wonder how many other England captains have said that over years and have come home with their tail between their legs or have been absolutely annihilated on home territory. So as you're right, you know, you could adapt that Richie quote and say it's 90% luck and 10% having a great bowling attack, which he did have, as you point out. And, you know, a lot of successful captains. You can't look at the list of successful captains and say, well, they had a ropey team. It doesn't happen very often. I mean, I don't know about Morgan. The truth is, something happened in those years between the two World Cups, the absolute disaster that England had in New Zealand and Australia, and winning it last year. So I'm prepared to give him credit for it until proved otherwise.
Well, I was going to say, if you were to sort of slag him off, you've not really got any danger of seeing him at Middlesex. I mean, he's rarely there, is he, these days?
No, well, yeah, he plays the one-day games, and I don't go to those. That's the best thing about there being no cricket, is that there's no T20 Blast starting tomorrow.
Hang on,
well,
a
god-awful abortion of a tournament.
We went to a game together, or we met up at a game almost 12 months ago, I suppose, which was that very fixture, and
it's
Morgan
true.
Was playing. So
it's
well,
true.
Pretty much all you said is a lie.
Well, I wouldn't have gone to it had I been paying for it, to put it that way.
Well, talking about missing things you're missing at cricket, I was wondering, I mean, Grubby, I don't know when the last time you played club cricket was, but I mean, Fred still, he sort of pretends to go to Blenheim Palace every now and again and fall over a couple of times. I'm wondering what you would be missing most about club cricket at this stage. I mean, we're almost into June, aren't we? I mean, you've probably got your first 50 by now.
Yeah, probably be giving my teammates a lovely big hug.
That's what you miss. Is that what you miss? Do you do that?
When I get my first 50, yeah.
Well, when they deserve it.
Before we came on out, Fred and I were talking while we were waiting for you, Grubby, to get yourself into that wonderful position outside your kitchen. we were wondering about this sort of thing, and I thought one of the strangest things that happened to me in club cricket was getting into the showers and suddenly realizing that the water that was cascading over my legs wasn't actually from the shower itself, but was from a teammate pissing on me. When I raised objections to this in about 1984, I think it happened. I haven't written it down. It's not in the calendar or anything like that. It struck me as quite a strange thing to do. And when I raised objections to this guy, Peter Batley, if you're still out there, you know who you are. Yeah, exactly. He laughed and he said, this is what everyone does, isn't it? So I suddenly thought, well, I better ask other people who've played club cricket. Has anything like that ever happened to you? Or?
No, that would be indelibly and wrongly etched in my memory had it happened. No,
would that put you off playing club cricket? Do you think that sort of thing?
Yes.
Mm. Put me off playing club cricket with a chap called Peter Batley in 1984. I'll tell you that much. I think yet again you've been the victim of you've been singled out for particular abuse. Let's put it that way, Pendo. And I would.
And it is abuse.
It's not too late to see a psychologist about it.
But also, if you listen to some of Freddie Flintoff's, interminable stories about his playing career and what a rogue he was. The stories that he's told on primetime television, well, Sky One, about, shitting in a Tesco bag and leaving it in a mate's car door.
Oh, I hadn't heard that one. Mate's car door?
Yeah, yeah, and that, and so, because it was something that had escalated, you know, one had played one prank and then it sort of gone there, they'd gone nuclear, or he'd gone nuclear and done that. And it'd been a really hot day. and this mate got in his car with his wife, and his wife reached into the pocket, and she was the one who fell foul. Shall we?
I didn't think my story could be. I've always had the story about Harry Pilling, which I've told to Gorilla listeners many times. I won't repeat it now because it's a bit too scatological. But these things obviously go on. These things go on in club cricket, in fact, all forms of cricket by the likes of it. Is that because
at every level?
Yeah, is this because there's just so much time to fill? That, you know, idle hands make, what is it, whatever it is, the devil's work?
I don't think it's their hand
like that.
That's making it. But,
no, you're probably right.
The idle asses to do.
Well, to move away from the scatological, the thing I'm probably missing about club cricket, and I didn't actually play last year, although I haven't officially retired. And about a month ago, I thought I'd really like to be playing again.
People are really waiting for that to know about that, Fred. I mean, they want to know how many more years you've got in you.
I was a lot more keen than some of my teammates who I told about that. I will say that. But it's just hanging around with friends on a warm Sunday afternoon. I'm lucky to play in a delightful location. What I'm not missing is cheating umpires from the opposition, of which we seem to come across more and more over the years. And it just engenders more bad feeling because our umpires say, well, I'm not giving in because their umpire's not giving anything. And it just gets worse and worse. And this is people who should know better. You know, people have been playing for a few years. But the thing about club cricket at the low level that I play and perhaps you play or have played at various times is you always see something absolutely hilarious. Something funny happens in every single game that you can sit and chat about. I was reminded of a club I played for about 15 years ago. There was a guy who, a lovely chap, he was coming to the end of his cricketing years, he was probably in his mid-40s. He'd lost all his hair as a young man in his 20s, and he started wearing a very obvious wig, which nobody talked about. It was as though, it just didn't exist. And the opposition would turn up and they'd take one strange look at him and then again not mention it for the rest of the day. But he was fielding at slip and the ball was edged down to long leg. It was a windy day and he headed down to the long leg and his wig headed down to third man and something cracked and nobody could take it anymore. And for 5 minutes, people were rolling around on the floor, unable to contain themselves. And they didn't want to laugh at him. They were laughing at the situation because he was a lovely bloke.
Was it Weave O'Shaughnessy?
He turned up next week without the wig, and he's never worn it again.
Ooh. So that was kind of sort of a defining moment in his life then, I guess.
It was very much a defining moment in his life, and I'm sorry to say I was one of the people rolling around on the floor laughing, as we all were, both teams, you know, both the umpires, everybody except this poor chap. And it was never even spoken about. Well, certainly not in his presence again. It was mentioned about other people who were there.
I don't think you talk about that, and there's all these books out there, aren't there, about hilarious things happening in club cricket matches, and I can't really think of many funny moments. I mean, I'm sure, you know...
Well, you were probably the butt of them.
Well, I possibly was, yes, I understand that, but I mean, maybe it was because I played at such an exalted level, Fred, where we took it so seriously that, that there was no time for humour. No time for humour, for goodness sake. I suppose the most funny thing is actually sweeping a ball to backwards square leg and been given out LBW. I think that probably takes the biscuit, and I think one or two people might have been quite amused by that. But
I bet you found that hilarious at the time, Henry.
Oh, absolutely, and it was unbelievably. It was kind of my mentor from my cricket club who'd been the coach, and he was bowling off breaks from round the wicket as well. And that's an extraordinary.
Well, more chance of an LBW doing. Your right armer, was he?
Yeah, right arm off breaks.
It was
wide on the crease. There was no
classic
way.
Line from Fred Tipples, no that is.
Well, probably true.
Are we going to go through all your LBW decisions there? Because this could be the longest podcast in history.
Well, I think possibly the public want to hear about the most notable ones. No, though, obviously I'm not going to. But it gives us a chance to sort of segue on to the Weave O'Shaughnessys. And the Weave O'Shaughnessys are doing particularly well in the Dick Weller Broad AUSAP Dice Game Trophy, are they not?
Yep. Pulling up trees by their roots.
And so confident you have been that you... I couldn't believe it. I was listening to it on Saturday morning. Your game against... who were you playing? Was it? It was the Beardy Bastards, wasn't it? It was against Roger McCann.
Yeah, it was against Roger.
And you were slapping it everywhere. You were slapping it everywhere. It was like, I don't know, factor 50. It was going all over the place. Graham Gooch, 90-odd in no time at all.
94 from 22, yeah.
And then you declared. You declared. Yeah, you
for the second game running.
And ridiculously, that cost you the chance of a bonus point, didn't it?
Well, it did in the end. But I do think that it's a game where each innings should last no longer than about an hour. And we were just clocking up to an hour. I'd actually gone a bit further than I was going to. I was going to declare it 200. And I thought,
hang on. Grubb, are you trying to tell me that you were making up your own rules?
No, I mean, I think I was acting perfectly within
rules.
That's
not a good thing to be doing this week. I think that's just a rule that's not been written. You are creating out of the ether a rule and pulling it down for your own
Grubby,
purposes.
If you were worrying about our listeners, that goes against the entire ethos of guerrilla cricket. We don't want to make things easy for them. We want to make it as tough as possible.
I had somewhere to be.
Oh, the other thing, of course, is we want to make it as difficult as possible. This is exactly why we've got a third place playoff. I mean, if you didn't.
Oh, no.
Yes, we have a third place playoff. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm hoping that one of you will be involved in that because that will be fun. Now, I should just say to people, if they haven't heard of the Dick Weller Broad Auzat Trophy, and judging by the viewing figures, I'm getting a feeling that some of them haven't. It is a wonderful tournament playing Auzat dice cricket with a number of different 11s created by 8 gorillas. And I suppose we're about halfway through the group stages at the moment, I think, something like that. Fred, I think, is already gone, I'm afraid to say. I mean, his how the fuck did they play for England 11 has been absolutely... Well, they've lived down to their name, really, haven't they?
I picked the team to lose, and they haven't let me down.
Exactly. So I think you could be proud of your efforts, I think.
It's gathering momentum, though, Hendo. We had over 50 watchers on Saturday.
50 watches? We're getting more. I watched you on TV, actually. I watched it on... I put YouTube on my TV, watched you, and it was a marvellous thing to behold.
Is it a televisual treat?
Oh, it was absolutely. I mean, people talk about, big screen action, but that really was. It was phenomenal stuff. And the fat fingers are fatter, obviously, on a 32-inch screen. I need to get one of those bendy HD curvatured screen. Yeah, just to really appreciate that it's best. Yeah, go on. Sorry.
For those who are listening who haven't watched the Dick Weller Broad Auzat Trophy, the fat fingers that Hendo's referring to is our very own Bear is. He's chief roller, which is somehow appropriate. He rolls the dice, so you get a close up of his his lovely paws.
He does.
And it's been the source of some controversy through the tournament, isn't there, with question marks against some of the decisions.
Yeah, a few missing frames, and that always tends to get us going. Anyway, let's move on and talk about what's likely to happen. I'm a little bit worried about the fact that that they keep making us try to go back to work when it's obviously not safe and people are dying, in their hundreds and thousands out there. So the test matches are down. England, West Indies from July the 8th. Will it happen? Gut feeling?
Yes.
Really? What makes you say that, Fred?
I've got a bigger gut than most of you, so my gut feeling is worth more than the rest of you have put together.
Well, I think that's pretty arguable. I think I might be able to fight you on in that particular...
We should make that pay-per-view. I think people would... we can raise a lot of money for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation.
Yeah, we're a good advert for that, actually.
Your team is, certainly.
Yeah. Well, yes, the Fat Boys, as leader of the Fat Boys. But, I mean, it's not that far off, July the 8th. It's a little bit over a month. And I haven't actually garnered the courage to go out more than about 200 yards from my house in the last 8 weeks.
That's to do more with your mental state than the world at large. I understood you've got more work during this crisis than you have in the last 5 years. So
I was, and now I'm down to 3 shifts in a month. Basically, that's basically it. So that's what about you, Grubby? With your children, have you been out playing in the park? And
yeah, we take them to the park every so often. We went up. Emma, my missus, took Freddie, my eldest, on a bike ride, and I was going to take Bertie, the younger one, for a little kick around on Tooting Common. And we got up there, and I've never seen it so crowded.
Oh, no,
so
it's crazy.
We had to go around the corner to Figgs Marsh, if you know it, where there was a little bit more space. Oh, I know, yeah.
Hey? What? Figgs Marsh?
The sort of place they hold circuses.
You run the risk of being commentated on by that bloke who's looking out of his window and tooting.
That's right.
And commentating on everyday life. Is that you're trying to muscle in on his territory? Do you know where he lives and see if you can get commentated on? You could go viral.
Well, I did my own version of football bowls, which I think I shared with you too.
Oh, I did see a bit of that. Yes, yeah, I did see a bit of that. Yeah.
Not bad. Well, I appreciate you should wholly original idea.
You should plug it to Channel 5. I'm sure they'll give you a whole series. Maybe at 3 in the morning, but I'm sure.
Yeah, well, that'd be all right. I mean, I'm the kind of person who watches things at 3 o'clock in the morning, so,
Well, there we are. I'll send it to you at 3 in the morning then, today. Can I give you another news story from this week?
Oh, yeah, go on.
So, again, just talking about some of the news you have to put up with. Well, I did notice that Sri Lanka have suspended their bowler, Shihan Madashankar, for a drugs infringement. And you're thinking, drugs infringement, is it? A bit of marijuana in the pocket, is it? Maybe he's got a cheeky sniff of cocaine or whatever. No, heroin.
Heroin, yes.
2.7 grams of heroin. Now, that's how you do it, Alex Hales, you amateur. Yeah. An interesting character. He took a hat trick on his only one day international appearance and hasn't played again, which makes
you wonder. Well, he obviously has his ups and downs.
It makes you wonder. You wonder what he did that morning, really, doesn't it? I suppose, in a manner of speaking. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we've got to think about this seriously from a guerrilla point of view, though, haven't we? Not the drug side of things, but actually whether we're going to be in line to be able to broadcast England versus the West Indies. Because, I mean, I've picked up so many germs from you people over the last 5 years that, you know, with this one, I'm a little bit worried. What can we do? Can we stand outside and do it? If we do it outside, it'd be better, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know.
I suppose we could do it with two people in the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're still in a little room, though, aren't you? I mean, I'm not sure. We'd have to open all the windows, wouldn't we?
There's only one window. Yeah. We could true. Zoom.
I mean, all windows in the house.
Would it work on Zoom, do you think?
I don't know. There's a bit of a delay. Well. I mean, not quite as well. It would be tricky, wouldn't it? I wonder actually, we should put this out to the listeners and those people that download this podcast and see if they've got any great...
We needed to be statistically robust.
Yes, absolutely. So we need to sort of have some social distancing recommendations so that we can be back as soon as possible, bringing you actual live cricket.
I've tried to keep my distance from all of you, you know, for years now.
So I find that
particularly difficult.
That's true. There's probably on the basis that no one knows where you live and never ever goes to your abode, your place must be the most hygienic.
It's no secret I live in and around Greater London. I mean, there's no secret about
in or around
around. Wow, that is a big place.
Well, everyone's got a second home, surely,
haven't they? Well, yes, that would be nice, wouldn't it? So what do you think? World T20, that's going to be off in October. What do you think would be the best time to play it? Apparently, if they have it in February and March, it means that there'll be two World T20s within 6 months or so. That doesn't sound like a great idea, does it?
It's pretty ludicrous having two in a year, which was the plan anyway.
Well, that's right.
Bright idea of just combining the two tournaments.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen because, you know, India have presumably got, you know, broadcasters to keep happy, as indeed of Australia. There was also talk they might put it onto the front of the Ashes in 2021. I mean, we managed it, didn't we? We had a World Cup followed by the Ashes last year. I mean, you could have that, and then you would have to delay the Indian one to 2022.
Yeah, I think smash those two tournaments together, the two 2020s, and call it, they could call it something ridiculous like T20 squared.
Well,
for a new generation.
I doubt that's going to happen because, without wishing to make boring points about business, they've sold, you know, contracts on the back of having a tournament and another tournament. And it's one thing to delay it and have it at a later date, but to just basically cancel one tournament is going to, well, it's going to resort to, you know, vast litigation and all sorts of things that go along with that, which is happening in every sport, TV contracts. It's unfortunate. It's not anybody's fault. There's nothing anybody can do about it. But I just think they're going to try and have separate tournaments for those two tournaments because of the, you know, the rights of the sponsors and everything else that goes into it, unfortunately.
Although there is a spanner in the works with India being threatened by the ICC that they might lose that particular competition because of tax problems. Anyone know anything about that?
Yeah.
No.
Well, again,
it's not going to happen.
We're sounding too much like the other podcast, you know, talking
exactly.
About
you know what I mean.
Yeah, there's always this jockeying that goes on before tournaments. You know, the Olympic Committee are experts on it, and so are FIFA, like, about getting exemptions and getting people to bend over backwards for them, sometimes literally. I think, you know, the ICC particularly have wonderful media partners of a very, very high quality. I think it's very important that they, you know, they are looked after and they are dealt with professionalism and paid on time. And sorry, what was I talking about again?
Talking about that, Fred, and for those of you who don't get Fred's oblique reference, he and the Bear were part of the ICC gravy train in last year's World Cup. And I just wondered, Fred, I'm going to ask you directly, could you, for the benefit of our several listeners, just dish the dirt a little bit on some of the famous cricketing names that you met. I'm thinking Clive Lloyd. Who else did you meet? Tendulkar.
Steve Waugh. Brian Lara, son of Gavaskar.
Give us a little bit of an inside scoop, something disgraceful about one or several of those people that our listeners can feast on.
But also not not slanderous, please.
I'm going to sound like the biggest Hollywood lovey, but I didn't meet anyone unpleasant at any point throughout the tournament. I didn't go to all the games. I went to about eight games.
That's not what they said when they met you.
I was sharing lifts with some strange people over various tournaments in various grounds and the odd commentary box. Colin Croft was an absolute diamond, and Clive Lloyd. You wonder about Clive Lloyd. He's soft-spoken. He's, you know, generous to a fault. He's so seemingly so friendly and pleasant and unthreatening. You wonder how he managed that team, how he captained that team, which had a reputation for being really, really tough bastards, you know. And they played some very, very aggressive, physically aggressive cricket. And you just wonder how to marry up the quiet, soft-spoken, easygoing chap Clive Lloyd with that battery of fast bowlers. You can look up on YouTube the session that Brian Close and John Ettridge faced. I can't remember what ground it was. It was at the Oval in 1970.
Old Trafford,
Oval,
I think. No, I think it was Old Trafford. Trafford, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sorry, yeah. And there was a sustained barrage, and Clive Lloyd was there. And you're thinking, that's not the Clive Lloyd I know.
Well,
isn't
one of those people who just likes to get other people to do his dirty work for him, because he'd been in charge of a team that was going nowhere, wasn't it, until they got stuffed by Australia, and that's when he decided to resort to this this pace battery, as it were.
Lillian Thompson with the inspiration in part.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just wondering though, Fred, given that you also met Colin Croft, I think after you'd met Clive Lloyd, if I'm not mistaken. You could have grilled Croft, couldn't you, on how Lloyd managed that?
I could have. I only saw Colin Croft in the final. no, I don't, actually. And I've got the lack of documentation to prove it. I was on with Colin on air at the end of the final, actually, in the Super Over. And it wasn't really the time to bring it up. I don't like to talk about it very much, so
no.
The recordings are out there if you want to if you want to find them. But Colin also is another one who had a reputation of being a real hard bastard in his time, and there's a lot in the West Indies who haven't forgiven him for various things that he did when he was a West Indian cricketer and subsequent to that. But again, a charming personality. You know, he comes across very well on TV and radio. He speaks pretty well in the game. Although I have to say, I don't think he's listening. He's got a very 1990s mentality towards one-day cricket, where it's always a case of, well, have a look in another couple of overs, have a look a bit later. Whereas nowadays, it's let's get the job done now and make it easy for the end. But I don't think he's quite moved with the times. He's not on the Brendan McCullum school. He's more of the Sunil Gavaskar in 1975, back through the overs type mentality.
Well,
but unfortunately, Grubby,
I was hoping a rich scene. What could be a richer scene than the indiscreet, not Fred Titmuss, talking about famous people in less than complimentary terms?
But it's I have no dirt to dish. I have no dirt to dish.
Are you saying to us that even now, is it not green room? Is there some green room stuff there? You know, sort of loitering around.
I mean, there is the possibility that Clive Lloyd had been so traumatized by being driven around the country by the bear. That he may have been shell-shocked, so we didn't see him at his robust best.
But, did he have a face that looked a bit like Bishop Brennan after he'd been kicked up the arse by Father
Pretty
Kane?
Much, yeah. And after that, it was, no, I'll take the train, thanks very much. You know, I'll see you there, sort of thing.
I would never go further than down the bottom of the road in the bear's car. I mean, it's a terrifying
possibility.
How anyone could actually go all the way to Ireland with him. I mean, you know, even if the ferry had capsized, I would have thought I was in a better chance of living than actually being near a wheel being wielded by the bear.
He drove the two of us up to Barnt Green in the Midlands when we went to interview Dougie Brown. That was all perfectly fine.
I went with the more sedate Tony at the wheel, I think.
Grubby,
I feel happy with that.
Grubby, dish the dirt on Dougie Brown.
Dish the dirt on Dougie Brown.
He's too nice. He's too nice.
They're all too nice. It's not good enough.
They're all too nice. That's the
problem. We need Chris Gayle and Rani Sarwan in a room together, and then we can have some fireworks. About a month ago?
Yep.
Chris Gayle, sitting at home, obviously with nothing to do, made a series of videos about the various shenanigans going on with the Caribbean Premier League, which has also, to be fair, you know, suffered financially and logistically from the worldwide pandemic. But he decided to use one of those videos to just slag off Sarwan for about 45 minutes. And it's quite funny.
And he's talked about it since, hasn't he? I mean, he referred to him as evil, which I think is perhaps, you know, when you regard what's going on in the world at the moment, I think to actually call Ram Naresh Sarwan evil is perhaps pushing it a little bit far. But he actually repeated it, didn't he? When he was asked to clarify what he'd said, he said, no, I still think he's evil.
Well, to be, I don't know whether anything's being lost in translation, you know, idiomatic. You know, if Michael Jackson called you bad, that would be pretty good. So who
or
knows?
Lenny Henry actually, called you wicked.
Yeah, I was quite impressed with his lucidity, and I actually think he might be reasonable as a broadcaster when he finally hangs up his, well, not his running shoes because he doesn't move very fast, but when he hangs up his 3-3-3 bat and shirt.
I can't imagine Chris Gayle being able to sit still long enough to sort of actually
really, I think
he commentate for extended
staying still, in a sitting position. Strength of his, I would have thought.
I mean, who else would? I mean, who are the least likely commentators of the future amongst the sort of people coming up to the end of their playing days, perhaps?
Ian Bell.
Ian Bell. Oh no, he wouldn't be good, would he? Actually, when we were listening, who? Sorry,
Trotty.
I don't know about that.
Oh no, although, I think you're right.
The reason I think about that is because when I was watching that 2013 Ashes game, Andrew Strauss was commentating, and it was still bad.
Yeah.
Bad when you hear it 7 years later, it was still pretty awful.
He did well to get out of that game.
I mean, he speaks very well, and by very well, I mean in a wholly sort of proper, like sort of boy that you'd be glad to introduce to your parents. You can almost even when you only hear his audio, you can hear the tie around his neck. He was born in a suit and tie, was Straussie. He's born for that sort of position that he's in. So he doesn't speak badly, but is he an interesting broadcaster? Probably not. I think
there was talk that he was going to stand as a Tory candidate at some point, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Thank God for that. Well, maybe not thank God for that, actually. Maybe he should have done.
I've said this before, but Stuart Broad, on the rare occasions I listen to interviews and I've heard him interviewed, is perhaps the most lucid current cricketer I think I've ever heard. And not only does he talk wonderfully, he's quite incisive about what's going on as well. So I think he's an absolute cert to walk into a commentary box, and he might actually be good.
Why is he never captained England? Is it only because bowlers don't?
Yeah,
there's elements of that.
He's not got a great reputation for judgment on the field, but you wonder how long it would take a Stuart Broad-led team to burn through their reviews. Probably by the end of the second over of a test match.
Well, it depends if he was bowling or not, I suspect.
Well, if he had no one to run it by, then
he has got better.
Yeah.
I think Jimmy Anderson, what I've heard of him, has been quite good. But I don't know. I just think that someone like Chris Gayle, there's just so much more out there for him in life.
Yeah, but he can only do one at a time, can't he? Well, maybe not.
But I just think that, you know, he'd be very difficult to get him to sort of be disciplined enough to come into a studio every day and particular time. And
well, I will say,
because he's having by his own timetable, doesn't he?
Having commentated in the West Indies, I think that may be a general rule about West Indies commentaries, in that rotors, times, and various things don't seem to have any effect. You know, you can say to somebody, be there at 1:30, you're doing the next stint, and they haven't turned up by 3 o'clock.
They sound like our sort of people.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, makes it sound like a guerrilla cricket rotor, which is probably what it is. I think we should tidy up there, really, chaps. I mean, I think we've shot the breeze for a little while, and hopefully we've been moderately entertaining, or at least we
have. There's always a first time.
I suppose, yeah, we might just have chanced upon something that made you laugh or think or run screaming to the hills. You can listen to actual serious podcasts made by Guerrilla Cricket, the ones that Knackle and Tony do, which are very much worth listening to. And you can also join us for the Dick Weller Broad Trophy as it goes on up until, I think it's June the 19th, the final. So there's plenty more fun. Jeez. The next match is on the 31st when it's the Weave O'Shaughnessys again, who are blazing a trail. They're taking on the Ginger Dread Men. Looking forward to that one, Grubby?
Oh, very much so. It's my wedding anniversary, so what could be more apposite?
Oh, that will go down well in the household, I imagine.
Yeah, it's all right. She's on a promise later on. Of a good meal.
Oh, right. Okay. So until the next time, which we're not quite sure when it'll be, but, you know, we come together occasionally. We're just like sort of protons rummaging around electrons, and sometimes we bump into each other. Join us again on the wonderful podcast that we know as If You Thought You'd Had Enough, Guerrilla Cricket Podcast. Join us again next time.
Ciao.
Very well. Bye.
Boy, course, so that was the innings of Brendan McCullum. Scores lots of fours because he don't like to run them. And here we are waving Brendan McCullum goodbye. Whoa, whoa.
Network.